Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast. Today, we're here to talk a little bit about Moon Knight. You've got me, your regular casual comics guy, Joe, with you. And today, it's Mark. Hey, Mark.
Good day. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Mark, our marvelous Marvel maven, Mark.
Wow, that was a lot of M's.
Pulling a Stan Lee there.
That was a House of M. That was a Stan Lee.
So, good. It's good to catch up with you, Mark. I just got back from vacation and we were chit-chatting about that before the show. But now it's like serious. We're like deadline. We're like 2 days till Moon Knight.
We've got to Moon Knight then.
Or two nights till Moon Knight.
That's right.
Till the moon comes out. I was looking it up. It was like Marvel missed the opportunity of like, I was like, what's the phase? Is it a full moon on March 30th when it comes out? It's like the labus. It's like waning crescent.
It's not a waning gibbon.
It's not a monkey.
There's a gibbon phase in there somewhere. There is. A
simian phase.
I'm going to look it up now.
There's a baboon phase somewhere. All we know is the moon looks like it has a red butt at this point. I think I know what you're talking about.
It is a waning crescent. You're right.
I have it up over the screen. Oh. I cheated. It's not like I could feel the tides pull in my body.
Some people can.
We're here today to talk about Moon Knight and give the listeners just sort of an idea of who Moon Knight is. You know, hopefully people will enjoy the show. Maybe they need a little introduction to who the character is. Maybe they watch the show and get a little interested and want a little background on the character as they get into it a little more. So we'll be talking about Moon Knight sort of through the decades because the character's taken on a lot of different iterations. And that's kind of the gist of this bad boy.
It is.
Getting ready for the Moon Knight goodness that Disney Plus is promising. But in the meantime, thought we'd catch up a little bit before we go on some other things that we've been talking about. I think last time you and I talked to Mark, the internet was very angry about Comixology.
Well, I hadn't used it since the update and I said, Joe, I had no reference point of it changing. And I'm like, Joe, this isn't what I remember. I can't even navigate properly. And you're like, oh, let me tell you something. It's really bad.
That was the full moon for real.
That was.
People were growing claws and turning into wolves out there. They wanted
it was really bad.
I want my digital comics back. And I'm like a traditional just buy the book at the newsstand person. Mm-hmm. But I get it. Like digital comics are huge and they're important. I think I mentioned to you one time, I talked to Dan Davis, was on our show, and he draws Garfield now.
Really? Another good name for Marvel, Dan Davis.
Dan Davis. He's the cartoonist.
he does Garfield. That's cool.
He does. And I thought if anybody's still buying physical books, it's a cartoonist. He's like, nope. He's like, I love it. He's like, I get all my comics. I don't have to take up boxes. I buy them. I do them all digital. He's like, it's awesome. And so I get it. People love it because I've been enjoying Comixology. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, when you ask me to read some books, it's much more convenient to have it on an iPad and read it. But I'm with you. I'm just still pretty nostalgic. If I had my druthers, I would buy them physically, the book.
I like it. So have you noticed any, I haven't really logged into Comixology since they've rolled out some of these changes. Have you had an opportunity? I just know that Amazon was like, oh, oops, sorry. We finally figured out that people who read comic books want their comic books done the way that they like them.
Well, I don't know if they changed it back or what. Maybe I'm not paying attention, but I think a month ago when I read it versus the last couple of weeks, I think I've noticed updates for the better. Like it seems like a better reading experience than when I first jumped back in a little over a month ago. So yeah. Did they make changes after the changes? I don't know.
I haven't gone in and checked it out myself yet. Like I said, what I found, it was harder to navigate to find books, the books you wanted, because they just integrated into the Kindle experience. And it just became like an extension of your Kindle. And it's like the shopping experience of like, oh, like you could subscribe to a title, quote unquote, subscribe. And then you just see a new issue every time it popped up. They lost some functionality there in finding comics that you wanted to find. I actually used it as the opportunity to be like, well, let me try out some of these other apps. And while I was on vacation, I downloaded Marvel Unlimited.
And oh, is that a separate app?
Yeah. Oh. I love it. I could not be happier with the comic book experience of Marvel Unlimited, mostly because I can read almost any Marvel comic through the ages in one location now. And I paid for the annual subscription. And if you buy it at an annual subscription, you're like a little under $7 a month.
Wow.
And 29,000 titles. So getting ready for Moon Knight, I was like, oh, let me try this out. Every Moon Knight comic that's ever been published is in here. The entire run of West Coast Avengers is in here. Wow. There's like 500 issues of the Avengers comics. There's like 800 Spider-Man comics in here. It's like everything that you wanted and everything you didn't know you wanted.
Now, the question is, Joe, have you pinned all of the Vision and Scarlet Witch comics in Marvel Unlimited?
I did not pin them all because those are ones I actually own, but I should. But you and I covered House of X, Powers of X.
And we did.
I'm like, boom, like that recent of series, they're on here. And what I'm seeing is it appears like any new Marvel comic, it seems like anything, they wait like 90 days or 120 days and then just drop them on the app here to read.
That's really good. They should be doing that.
And so like, I am going to catch up on, like, there's all this stuff that like when we did House of X, Powers of X, that I was like, nah, interesting, but I'm not going to keep up with it because I got to pay for it. Well, I may as well read it while it's here until it gets boring and drop it.
Yep. And you know how Marvel, I don't know if they still do this, but at least once a year, they do like a major event. And I'm always like a year or two behind. So I go and buy the graphic novel that combines them all.
Right.
But they usually doesn't come out until a year after, sometimes two. And what you're telling me is I can basically read those a few months afterwards. So I might have to think about getting that.
Yep. I'll check into it. And maybe we'll talk about it on an upcoming podcast. But speaking of that, that ties into what I want to talk about next is what I'm reading is I am reading Donny Cates is writing Hulk now. And I don't remember. I don't know if you remember. We talked about Donny Cates' run on Thor. He's writing Thor right now, too. And we covered it in a previous podcast. And it started off with Thor becoming the Herald of Galactus. And that's the kind of stuff he does. He does like galaxy shattering stuff.
Unconventional. Yes. Yeah.
Thor can't pick up the hammer anymore, or it's getting difficult, but everybody else can. He's the Herald of Galactus. And it's like, what is going on? Up is down, left is right, cats and dogs living together. And in his most recent run of Hulk that he started, it's called Smashtronaut.
Hello? What?
It is literally, it's going to sound weird, but Bruce Banner has converted Hulk into basically a being that's able to fly through outer space like a rocket ship. And he has divided he split his own persona three ways. And so like, here's Hulk's body, but you literally see Banner sitting inside Hulk's head like he's an astronaut flying a spaceship. What? So there's the Hulk body, Banner's in control of it, and the engine room is Hulk and his personality and rage. And like every time he needs more power, he's like, I'm going to do this thing to piss Hulk off a little more. And he makes him like have visions like he's fighting Wolverine, and he's getting angry fighting Wolverine. And that makes the Hulk body more powerful and able to do the stuff he wants to be able to do. Mm. And so the premise of that started off the Donny Cates Hulk run, they're on like issue 5 now, was what if Banner, it's like that thing of like Thor, he's going to take something you think you know and flip it. It's like,
yep. What if flip the script?
What if Banner doesn't exist to protect us from Hulk, but Hulk exists to protect us from Banner because he's just a real jerky guy.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, interesting.
He's now hijacked the Hulk's body, and he's going to do like smashing through crap, trying to get to what he needs to get to with no care for anything. And so Cates is writing Thor, which is very interesting. And he's writing Hulk, and his next big mini series is Hulk versus Thor, Banner of War.
Well, that'll be kind of neat then.
There's a trailer for it online, but like Banner's doing sketchy stuff. Hulk's not in control of even Hulk anymore. Banner's like in control of Hulk now and is kind of torturing Hulk's consciousness to fuel the body by making him more and more mad all the time.
I like those odd takes that people do on things. I kind of like them exploring that. So I'm looking forward to reading.
So maybe with the Marvel Unlimited app, you won't have to wait several years.
I don't have to wait until wait for the movie.
Anyway, I'm super excited about that. And then the last thing I want to catch up with you before we dive into Moon Knight is this, these comics that you're selling. You told me you were selling your back issue stash online.
Right.
How's that all going? Like, how does that work and how's it going?
So I kind of floated up think of it like a test balloon. I took all the ones that I really probably want to keep and kept them. And I took about 20 comics that they said they want to auction off, or I can put them on consignment, or I could just sell them to them directly. So I thought for this first test, I would put them in their online auctions. So you mail them, you say what you think the ratings are. So there's two things I learned. One is I have a much higher rating system than the actual rating system on comic books. I'm like,
this when you is, say rating, you mean like the quality, like one to 10
quality. Yes.
What like, good of shape is it?
Yes. In? Yes. And basically they say, if you've read the comic book,
yeah.
So there's like a 10 point rating and they do every half, but if you've opened up the book, it's a 7. It immediately goes from a 10 to a 7. And I'm like, well, all mine are like 9 or 10. And they're like, no, they're all 7.
Wow.
So I think they're in pristine effort, but I've read them. So if you've opened it up and bent the spine at all,
yeah,
like it is not a 10 anymore. It's like an 8 or a 7. So wow. That was the first big learning. So if, it's like you said to me a long time ago, is you buy two of them, one to collect and one to sell, one to read. That's yeah. It's basically, it's super rare to find a 10 anywhere because people read them. So that was a big learning, was the rating system. And then, but the experience has been great. And then the second thing is to be patient, because you send them in, then they have to rate them, and then they have to like organize them. And so my comics, I tried two things. I tried the online auction, which one of them starts like mid-April. And then I tried the consignment, which is you set a minimum price and then it's in their everyday auction. These are my everyday air balloons. it's like an everyday auction thing. Right. And you set a minimum price. And then if somebody wants to buy it for that price, you just sell it.
Yeah.
And so I put a couple in that method, and then I put a couple in the auction. I'm just waiting to have that start. So okay. You got to be patient. So no news yet. And then two of them, they're like, we can't even sell these. Do you want us to send them back to you? Or do you want this price? And the price was actually pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
So I just sold them to them, and I already got a PayPal. You know,
what were the ones they couldn't sell? Just too bad of shape, or
yeah, it was one of them was too bad of shape. It had a Maverick corner.
Maverick.
And one of them, they said, basically we got too many of these in at the same time, and we're probably not going to be able to sell it, but we will buy it for you for our inventory.
Ah.
And I compared all this. I went and bought an Overstreet comic guide, so I knew I wasn't like completely swindled. And they bought them both for basically what I would get in the comic guide if I were to like sell them and trade them in. So they've been pretty reasonable to work with so far.
Well, that's interesting. I'll have to give you, I'm doing the opposite. I'm in the mode of collecting,
yep.
Buying books. And you telling me that the fact that you open it makes it a 7 makes me feel better, because I'll show you after the break, right behind me on my wall.
Yep.
I think it's X-Men 194, 10, maybe X-Men. I don't know what it is. First appearance of Dazzler.
Ooh.
And it's a 9.4.
Yeah, that's legit. Like, it's never been opened, or if it was opened, it was opened with like white gloves. Anything above an 8 is like perfect, near perfect quality.
You won't be surprised to know. You see this one on the wall behind me, the red one?
Yeah.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Avengers 57, first appearance of Vision, 6.5.
Yep, that's a good rating for that old of a book.
What makes me feel better? Because I was like 6.5.
No, I kept all mine in bags and backings.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I didn't, you know, ruin them. And I think the highest rating I got of the comics I sent them was an 8.5.
Cool. All right.
Now, could they be hosing me? I don't know, but it seems reasonable when they show the rating system.
They're probably not. Well, cool. Thanks for catching me up on that. And then that gives me an idea. We'll talk about my experience buying and grading comics on an upcoming podcast. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Moon Knight action.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. You wouldn't like us when we're angry. 7,
first appearance Vision.
12 cents.
And it's Uncanny X-Men number 130, first appearance of Dazzler. I spoke incorrectly.
9-4.
9.4. You hear those clacking? That's some solid.
That's a slab.
They slab these. What I don't have slabbed yet, but it's the latest addition to my collection. It was just this last week. Werewolf by Night 32, first appearance of Moon Knight. So the stars have aligned, the celestial bodies in the sky, including the moon, are here now for us to talk about Moon Knight. Coming into this, you know, Mark, you've been a Marvel fan for a long time, and Moon Knight really, although Werewolf by Night 32, first appearance of Moon Knight, I think was late 70s. I should know, but I haven't opened it yet because I don't want to... I don't want the number to go down.
That's right.
But Moon Knight really kind of got popular, I think, in the 80s, which was right in the sweet time of when I was reading comics. What were your recollections of Moon Knight, like at a high level, before we went right back and reread these?
It was, so I was talking to my wife and saying I was doing a podcast with you on Moon Knight. And she has a much better memory than I do of these things. I go, what do you remember about me telling you about Moon Knight? And she said, well, he told me it was Marvel's answer to Batman.
Which is interesting because there's a lot of that talk going on right now. A lot of people online are like, oh, it's Marvel's version of Batman. And I'd be interested when we get to the end of this to revisit that. Is it really? And in what ways is it? In what ways sort of isn't it Marvel's right. version of Batman? Because again, right. he wears a cowl and a cape and he throws crescent darts, not batarangs, or crescent darts.
And he's vengeance.
Right. He's vengeance. But did you sort of recall his, you know, powers, origin? I remember you and I played Marvel, was it Ultimate Alliance, the first one? Mm-hmm. And Moon Knight pops up as a character you unlock at some point. And I was so excited. I was like, oh, Bo Staff.
Well, so other than the Batman reference, It was just too much for me at that age. I only liked his name because he had the first name spelled the same as me with M-A-R-C. But other than that, Joe, a friend of mine really liked Moon Knight, a different friend. And he liked the whole idea that he had all these different personalities and the dissociative identity disorder. And because that's what it was in the 80s. And I was just like, I don't want to read about this. This is too real. So I didn't like it that much in terms of him as a character. What I liked is the whole, honestly, the Batman aspect of it. He was like a harder, tougher vigilante than Spider-Man. So yeah. that's my anchor point with Spider-Man. And I'm like, well, I kind of like Moon Knight when he's kicking butt, but the whole, he's four different people. And he's like, I was like, I couldn't wrap my head around it at the time. So not a huge fan of the 80s of him.
I remember liking Moon Knight a lot because I thought his costume was awesome.
That part too. Yep.
And I remember him always wearing like an Egyptian ankh like around. And I was like, that's kind of cool. But you know, to be honest, until I started re-picking up these books and reading it, I don't know what, if I, you would ask me, what do you remember about Moon Knight? What do you like other than he looks cool? He's got some cool powers. He gets stronger at night when the moon's out. I don't know why I just always had this like huge love of the character. And then I read some of the more recent series and I liked the more recent series, but this is the first time I went back and picked up old books and said, what would I have been reading back then? And so what we read Moon Knight number one from 1980, which was the first, I think, solo series of Moon Knight. We read a West Coast Avengers issue. And then we read a couple more modern books, but let's dive into Moon Knight number one from 1980. The history of Moon Knight in publication is, as we've talked about multiple times, Werewolf by Night 32 was his first appearance. And I did reread that on the Marvel Unlimited app. So I didn't have to open the comic itself.
Nice.
to get back to, you know, what was the character. And in his first appearance, he's coming in as a side character in Werewolf by Night, which is a dude who turns into a werewolf. He's like 17. He doesn't want to. And Moon Knight's just beating on him because Moon Knight has been hired to go capture this by some secret society called the Committee, who's trying to capture this werewolf dude. And in that issue, his costume is white, but it's lined with silver. So when he's fighting a werewolf, when the werewolf hits him, it hurts the werewolf. And when he punches the werewolf, it hurts extra hard. And he's got these gloves where there's like big spikes on the knuckles, which sort of fade in and out of his costume over time. Sometimes he has them and sometimes he doesn't. But in that issue, that was his debut. And he's there sort of at the behest of this shady character, which then is where he starts out with his mercenary stuff. He's a dude who gets paid to do stuff. His next appearance after that, he was popular enough that they gave him a turn, I think, in Marvel Spotlight. They gave him a solo run that wasn't tied into Werewolf by Night. And the character was popular enough that his first solo series is what we read. It was his first ongoing, Moon Knight number one, starting in 1980. And this goes into the origin of Moon Knight. And do you want to give a quick recap of Moon Knight's origin from reading the book, Mark? You want to run down what was important to know about his origin?
Well, it'll be interesting watching the Disney series, how they interpret it. But basically, you're right. He has some morals, but he's basically suppressed those in the interest of earning a quick buck in the mercenary space. And so he falls around this other mercenary named Bushman. And his whole thing is to do a really good job as a mercenary, you need to instill fear in your targets and your enemies. So he kind of has a skull tattoo, basically, Bushman does.
Right.
And he just keeps going deep. Bushman keeps going deeper and deeper into challenging the moral low ground, if you will, to where Mark Spector, or I think it was his name back then in the origin. And he challenges him. And long story short, Bushman challenges him and ends up killing him and then leaves him for dead in the desert. And that was because I'm not going to get into all the details on that, but Mark Spector just challenged like the life that he chose and ended up costing him his life, but he leaves him for dead in the desert. Mark Spector ends up dying in the desert. And these priests, I suppose, drag him into a temple. And part of what was helping him was this lady that he ended up saving that cost him his
life. Right.
And he's in the shadow of this moon priest, I think. And
it's like a statue of a moon god.
Yes. Statue of a moon god. And he brings him back to life because he said, I want you to be my fist of vengeance. In this case, the fist of Khonshu. And he wants to bring him back to life. And he does, but not without, was the consequence, but I'll pause there, Joe. What do you want to say?
Yeah, this is where you first meet like Mark Spector, and he's wearing like they're like in the desert, kind of like in Egypt, right? There's sand everywhere, and he's got the total 80s A-team ripped off sleeves, button-up shirt, no sleeves, muscles underneath. He's a muscle dude, and you're right. It's sort of like, and this is where I started to remember what I kind of liked about it, because he's different than other heroes in that he's in Egypt. And this was like at a time where I was kind of into Indiana Jones, stuff like that, and the globe trotting stuff. So unlike other Marvel heroes that I was seeing, he was a lot of around the globe. Now, he wasn't a good dude at the beginning of this because he was just this mercenary, and Bushman starts to go too far. And he's like, what we're going to do is we're going to steal all this sort of archaeological treasure and use it to finance some bad stuff. And Mark crosses him, and the woman that he winds and he gets blamed for killing her father, which Bushman does, as her father's trying to assassinate him, and you're right, leaves him for dead. And then it's Marlene's there too, and I bring her up because she keeps popping up in Moon Knight comics over and over. Marlene sort of becomes this steady influence in his life, is that although he's partially responsible for the death of her father, she sees the good in him and sticks with him. But yeah, like at the very beginning, sorry, I'm skipping around a little bit. This is key to know about him. He dies, like Mark Spector dies. And then this Egyptian god brings him back to life while he's there. And it's Khonshu. And I think she calls him Khonshu, one of the gods of the moon known as the taker of vengeance.
Yes.
So it is a vengeance thing, but then immediately he desecrates the statue and grabs the cloak off, and he's like, guess this is my costume now.
Here I go. But it was Joe, as we were talking about earlier, reading it now, and we'll skip to the other books too. It's like, that's got to mess you up mentally to die and then come back to life. And that's the reason for his like dissociative identity disorder. And I'm like, when I was 13, I didn't really, or 12 when I read it, I didn't really quite understand that. And reading it now, it's like, oh, that's actually kind of makes more sense now. And then the connection to Marlene, like you said, it's like his constant. Desmond and his constant loss.
Right.
And so it's his anchor, because that was what ended up killing him, was he tried to save her dad and he ended up failing and then dying in the whole process.
Yeah. He gets also, we're introduced to his other trusty companion there, Frenchie.
French, yes. Which, and when he, by the way, when he, key point in the book, I think, is when he does get brought back to life, he doesn't know who he is.
Right.
So he's like, where am I? Who am I? I don't remember that part. I was like, oh yeah, because that's the stuff when you're a kid, you just skip over. It's like, oh yeah, he just got brought back to life. Like, he's pretty messed up mentally.
Yeah. And Frenchie helps him get back. And as soon as he gets back, there's this quick, just like, they get into his different personalities in like one panel. That's it. It's like one panel. Okay. He gets back to health and he gets three new identities. Still Mark Spector, becomes Stephen Grant, who is sort of the Wall Street front of, he takes all the money Mark Spector earned as a mercenary and invests it and makes millions of dollars. And then another personality, which is Jake Lockley, which is just a cab driver. So he can go and infiltrate like the underground, and he can like be a seedy cab driver and get into parts of town he couldn't if he was Stephen Grant. And he lets the Mark Spector personality go for most of it. So now he's like, there's four personalities that kind of stick with him through all of the iterations of it, is Stephen Grant, Jake Lockley, Moon Knight, Mark Spector. And they hit on that right away in the trailer in the Disney Plus series. This is going to be a big deal.
Yep.
Because although it seems at the beginning of this book, at least in the first issue, that at this point in Moon Knight's career, he just adopts these personas. It does become more pronounced over time, especially with his resurrection, that these aren't just personas he adopts. These are different people he becomes.
Right. Right. But they're quick to, it's not split personality. Like, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I don't really know the tip, but they're, it's dissociative identity disorder, which I guess is different. It's like not knowing who you really are. And this is part of the whole thing of when he does get resurrected and he doesn't know who he is, but he immediately knows who Khonshu is. Remember? Cause she's like, how did you know who he was? And this robe's mine now.
Right.
So it's like, he's not possessed, but he is possessed. Like, that's the other angle that I find interesting about this, reading it again, like 30 years later.
Right. It's interesting. It introduces, though, right away, a lot of those themes are going to stick with Moon Knight over time.
Right.
I love it, because then he gets back to the city and he's still looking for the Bushmen to figure out. And it becomes like one of my favorite parts, is he goes to the seedy underbelly. And I believe it's where he's dressed as the cab driver, Jake Lockley. And then he figures out where he needs to go, because he gets a hint from some dude who has flies buzzing around his head, some drunk somewhere, of where he needs to go. And he like starts disrobing right away, and his Moon Knight costume is underneath his cab driver outfit. And Frenchie picks him up in the helicopter, and then he goes straight to like a strip club, which is where the business is going down. Because it's one of my favorite lines, is Marlene's looking for him, and she's like, "Oh, the last chapter in traffic." I said, "He swooped down to this block, it means it's got to be this jiggle joint over here." And I'm thinking of myself at that age reading this, and what I've even got. It must be this jiggle joint.
yep. And that's the Batman reference. They literally call it a cowl, Mike. So he's got a cowl. He's got a ladder. He's got gadgets. Like, that's probably, you know. And he's got the big, like, he swoops in and he talks about his swooping ability of, you know, hey, I'm gonna need a better, I don't know what you'd call it, ground, you know, what they call base jumping outfit or something like
right.
that.
Right. So, but I thought it was a good introduction to the character. I think if you don't know anything about Moon Knight, it's a pretty dated book. And yep. I'll actually give Marvel credit on this, because I don't know if I don't know how it appeared in Comixology, but when it appeared on the Marvel app, on Marvel Unlimited, it actually has a bit of a disclaimer at the beginning of some of the references in there. Did it have it in Comixology? But it literally starts off, again, you never know how to handle these things, with, it says, This previously published content includes negative depictions of people or cultures. These stereotypes were wrong then and are wrong now. Social change is a journey, and we must acknowledge where we've come from to build a more inclusive future. Just because it does have some negative stereotypes of, you know, the place they're at in Egypt and even the Bushmen to some extent, and that character will evolve over time, but it's a pretty broad caricature, at least out of the gate.
Yeah, it's Amazon, so they don't have any such disclaimer.
Okay. Well, this is in Marvel's own app that they put it on the front of this.
Which I like. I like that disclaimer. They should put that in there. Of they don't want to alter the content of the book, but they should put a disclaimer of, hey, there's some things in here that probably are offensive. And I think that's the right way to do it. You shouldn't change content of something like this, but you should disclaim, hey, jiggle joints probably not appropriate.
The most appropriate thing there is. No, but it's right. I think, not to be too serious about it. What it helps me understand what I was reading at that age, and seeing it in how it was originally presented helps me be like, I wonder how this may have influenced me or shaped me in ways that I didn't know. And seeing it now as an adult, I have a different perspective on it, but I don't know. I'm not going to get into the debate of whether things should or should not be presented. I'm just glad the way that they did it and put something to acknowledge at the beginning of it. So
yes.
If anyone's going to read it, be aware that the disclaimer is there, but it is a good introduction. Like, in a nutshell, you get sort of who he is right away. I was confusing this book with one of the other Moon Knight series that I had growing up, which was actually called, I think, Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu from 1985, which also just starts. And so I went back and reread that. That starts with the same, like, it takes this story and boils it down to like two pages. And it's like, previously on Moon Knight. So you like get right into it. And that takes it even further down the path of the mental things that are associated with that. The other book that I recommended that we read for this section was West Coast Avengers number 21. I was like, I remember reading Moon Knight in West Coast Avengers. I remember he was part of that team. And I looked it up and they're like, this is first appearance of Moon Knight as part of the West Coast Avengers team. And I'm like, well, I want to go back and see that again because I remember it. Did you read it, I assume?
Yep, I did.
What do you think of that book?
I thought it was so odd. Like, I didn't even... Time has split in five. I'm like, what? I just reading this book alone, Joe, I was so confused. Like, what is going on? Like, you know, and then it's like, not... I mean, I guess we're doing a spoiler. Like, Hawkeye dies. I didn't even remember that. And he gets brought back to life. By the same dude.
Moon Knight dies. They all die. Yeah,
they all die. Why doesn't he become Moon Knight? Like, I'm like, what just happened? He drives a hard bargain.
I read it.
I'm shocked. I'm like, Hawkeye died. What?
How did he die?
You're burying the lead here. Dr. Pym joins the team. Oh, Hawkeye died. I'm like, what? I don't even know. They got lost in time. Somebody sent him back in time.
Right.
They hypnotized the guy that sent him back in time, or he has like a life sapping ray. He zaps him of their life, but he's already broke his arm apparently in another issue. Right. Hawkeye. And they drag him into this. It's like, it was a weird like parallel to the Moon Knight. They drag them all in there, and Hawkeye has visions of Khonshu, and Khonshu's like, I'll bring you back to life, but I need you to go fight this guy. And he's like, all right, but you gotta put me back into my time period. He's like, I can't do that kind of power. I work in subtleties. And Hawkeye's like, well, then subtly send a message to somebody that can tune me back into the right time frame. He's like, deal. And then they do it. Oh my gosh.
I didn't even know what to make of this book. When I suggested it, like I said, literally, it was like, oh hey, first appearance when Moon Knight joins.
What does he have, like, Avengers. Two panels?
And Moon Knight. He's hardly in it. It's like a whole Khonshu deal. Where's Moon Knight?
I'm not a fan of the gold. I don't like the gold on him. That must have been like an 80s thing.
On Moon Knight?
Yeah. He's got gold. He's like a gold belt and gold bracers.
Oh, yeah. That costume leaves a lot to be desired. It's not the straight on.
That's 80s.
It was like it felt like we're in ancient Egypt. What can we do here? Oh, yeah, Khonshu. Forgot about that guy. Let's have Moon Knight join the West Coast Avengers. He's barely in it. Although there is a meme that is based off of that that this is, if you've ever seen the Moon Knight panel where he's throwing darts, this is apparently where that comes from. But it's like, Moon Knight, you're like, what is he doing in LA in the middle of the day fighting dudes in like 85 degree weather? It's like, that's not Moon Knight. Get out of there.
That's not Moon Knight. Get out of there. By the way, this is a nod to the artists. They can create a guy, call him Dr. Pym, and make him look really cool in a lab coat with his collar up and wind is blowing his tie to the side. I'm like, he looks pretty cool. Dr. Pym.
Pym and his Pym particle. That's my favorite is the Pym
particle. That book was weird, Joe. That was one of the ones of like, what is going on? Subplots of Wonder Man and stuff. It's so weird.
When I was preparing for the show, I'm like, well, we don't need to talk about this book long, except that it reminds me of how much I love West Coast Avengers because it's such crazy nonsense. But also it's like, we're introducing two new characters to the team in part four of a 5-part series that you probably have no idea what's going on. It's like, save the introduction for two new additions to the team to kick off a book or kick off a story.
It's Marvel's version of jumping the shark. Let's do West Coast Avengers. Let's throw two more to the roster. Let's split it in 5 timelines.
You did have Tigre. What is going on? You did have some Tigre, which I always like some Tigre. No,
that's not bad, Tigre.
You got Iron Man in his classic silver.
You know, that was one of my
probably Rhodey, because it's probably Rhodey. Yeah. They don't say it for sure. You got some Mockingbird, although this is like it seems like a creepy subplot there with Mockingbird, that she's like under some dude's control for her to fall in love with him. Ah.
Who also looks kind of like Moon Knight. So as if it wasn't confusing
enough.
He's
the Phantom Rider.
I know, but he's wearing all white.
I know.
It's Moon Knight with a cowboy hat.
Probably already talked about this book too much.
We did.
June 1987, West Coast Avengers 21. Don't dive in there if you're looking at the history of Moon Knight.
That would be correct, Joe.
All right, let's take one quick break. And when we get back, we'll be talking about Moon Knight Modern with Moon Knight number one from 2014 and Moon Knight number one from 2021. A lot of Moon Knight number ones when we return.
By the hoary hosts of Hoggoth, you're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, everybody, we're still talking more Moon Knight here on the Casual Comics Cast with our good buddy Mark, and we're about to dive into some more modern Moon Knight tales. And this gets into a little bit of, this is like where I'm really excited for the Disney Plus series, because Moon Knight becomes a really fungible character, where now that his origin is established, where he's got multiple personalities, he's tied into the Egyptian mystical realm in ways that I find very interesting, but he's also a very capable mercenary, an awesome fighter, but there's something off about him because of the way his brain is reacting to being mishandled by an Egyptian yep. god is the only way I can put it.
That's right.
That becomes fascinating. And so Moon Knight number one, 2014, written by Warren Ellis, takes the book in an interesting different direction than previously, kicking off with just a straight ahead Moon Knight, a little bit of an action tale. It's a pretty good self-contained book. What do you think of Moon Knight number one from 2014, Mark?
Yeah, I think it took all of the, I suppose, disclaimer elements from the 80s book and brought the best out of Moon Knight. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It really helped me, you know, maybe it's because I'm older and understand it better, but it just walks through. Here's kind of a more modern take on what Moon Knight should be. You know, the whole aspect of vengeance. And I think, Joe, was this the one where they kind of go into the four aspects, or is that the next book? Am I skipping ahead?
I'm trying to look it up as we're talking here,
but I think they do.
I mean, I think both of these books, I think it's this one though, in particular, they do start talking a little bit more. They get into it again, is that he's got four aspects. It starts off with like them recognizing Moon Knight's back in town. He's always been trouble. And there's a Detective Flint out there on the streets where there's some kind of what appears to be a serial killer on the loose. And they're going to call in Mr. Knight. And this is the first appearance of this costume and this aspect, which is yet another version of him, because it's not Mark Spector, but it seems to be a different personality called Mr. Knight, where he's wearing just a classic like three-piece suit, all in white, white mask, and he's like super leaning into this, which they've actually recapped this multiple times in multiple books now that I've gone back and read a lot of them. It's like, why do you wear all white and a giant cape that makes you look like a moon if you're fighting crime at night? It's like, because I like him to see me coming.
Right.
Like,
and as I say, this, Joe, is where reading this reminded me more of the like kid aspect version of he is Marvel's answer to Batman. Like, he literally is being a detective, but they bring in the whole multiple personality type thing. But I liked how it just was more edgy for them because they could talk about a serial killer and him doing all these gory experiments. And then at the end, he has to fight the guy. But this whole idea of, you know, if you go back, Marvel really didn't have any answer to all of the deep, dark night stuff. So I think this was their reattempt, even as early as 2018 or 2014, whenever it came out, was to really kind of dive into the, well, let's have him kind of be more like Batman. I actually liked it.
Right. And I think you're right. That's where it comes in, because this is where Moon Knight goes from sort of this globe trotting, tied into Egyptian mythology, out in the desert fighting, you know, the Bushmen, and like sort of adventures that take place all over, to him being in the city and being really that vengeance, and being he becomes the protector of those who travel at night. And I don't know that concept is necessarily introduced in this series, but this, mm-hmm. they lean into it hard, is that he exists in order to protect people who have to travel at nighttime. And he's super capable. He figures out what's going on pretty much right away. And he like handles the situation before you realize it's even been handled, in a very
right.
Batman-esque type way of just like,
yes.
You didn't even know what I did 10 minutes ago. What I did 10 minutes ago, this whole problem was over.
Right, right. And that's the detective aspect of Batman, of he outthinks you before the battle has even begun, and you've pretty much lost. You just didn't know it yet.
But
and that's
little,
really what he does.
A little crazier than Batman, although Batman gets pretty crazy in the comic books too, but to the point where, you know, the book ends with him visiting with his therapist, and then that's where they get into the four aspects, and she ties it back to those four personalities being four different aspects of Khonshu in a way that I don't think anybody did before either, which is, it was very much dissociative identity disorder as a mental health thing, but it's made explicit here is that there are four facets to the god Khonshu, and those four facets are the Pathfinder, the Embracer, the Defender, and the Watcher of Night Travelers. And in his most violent moments, quote, Khonshu's secret aspect, the one who lives on hearts. And those are the five facets of his personality that exist within him. And he doesn't always have those connected to each other because, again, he was driven by Khonshu. And the way that she describes it is, you're not insane. Your brain has been colonized by an ancient consciousness from beyond space-time.
Right. It's like, oh, so that's what happened.
Right. And then he actually sees Khonshu at the end, where, you know, Frenchie can't see him, but he's got a weird bony beak.
Yes.
Weird, creepy, like horror movie type thing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think that's what they're trying to draw on is this whole aspect, which is why he's fighting. It's almost like Batman meets the Supernatural show.
Right.
You know, I think if you guys got to go back to figure out what was popular back then, I think Vampire Diaries and Supernatural. So again, I think they were pulling through a lot of these themes in this book and trying to put a Moon Knight take on it of what else travels at night? Well, lycanthropes, like werewolves, right, and vampires and ghosts. And so they really kind of bring that out in this. Again, I'm not a fan of those types of things, but I was a fan of how they depicted Moon Knight in this book.
And I think that's where this will start to lean into the Marvel Universe, because they're reintroducing Blade. They've already announced that. And they're going, I think, with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, they're talking about the reintroduction of vampires into the Marvel Universe. So there's going to be this horror aspect, and I think Moon Knight fits into that nicely. as they get into that. We get into Moon Knight number one, 2021. This is the most recent, because it was 2021, from Jed MacKay. And this then is, I kind of felt like picking this one up. Hey, let's look at this one, because Marvel knows that Moon Knight's about to premiere on Disney Plus. And what is, how are they going to interpret the character in comics? I guess, because if I was them, I would think maybe people might want to pick up a comic book about Moon Knight, and this would be the one that's most accessible to them now. What do you think about this book?
Well, I think it was just a slightly different take on the first, well, the 2014 one that we read. I didn't think it was as, I suppose, dense as this, as that iteration. So maybe it was just a safer take on it. But like you said, if there's any indication, then they really leaned into in this book the whole idea of the supernatural.
Right. I think
what he's really defending, there's other bad people out at night that, and like werewolves, and he's out there to get them.
Yeah. This was interesting to me, because this carries on. I should have mentioned, it was actually, I read a really cool thing with Declan Shalvey, who was the artist on the 2014 series that we just looked at, with that Mr. Knight aspect where he's got just a straight mask on his face and a suit. That was the first time Moon Knight was ever depicted that way. And he had tweeted out something of like seeing Oscar Isaac dressed that way in the Moon Knight series. Like, I can't believe something that just came out of my brain is coming onto the screen that looks like that, because he just invented that whole cloth himself, that whole look. And so that's actually like pretty cool, because it's kind of a cool look that you don't expect from a superhero. But it continues in this book. So it makes me feel like, you know, that came up, and that's the most recent iteration, is this Mr. Knight stuff. I'm hoping that's a big part of the series, but this book felt like two pieces to me, two sides of the same coin, a fractured personality, which was, as an introduction for a reader who wants to know about Moon Knight, you're right. It's a high level. It's a safe way to get a couple of the pieces of that. But the pieces you get out of this one are, he's there. He has the Midnight Mission, which exists to protect those who travel at night. And then he has the multiple personalities that, you know, they bring that up again. His therapist here talks about, same thing, is like a poet who had one total personality until he was visited by a supernatural entity or a god, and then became very different. And they're like, you know, that makes me wonder what happened to you. You know, what changes will you go through?
Joe, is where maybe you were conflating the two, but this is one where they have the therapist more than the other book. So this is the one where they try to do a background of that. And what they really make a point, which I think is interesting to think about the ramifications of the Disney Plus show, is they just come out and say, like, he can't die. Like that,
right?
To me, that was the first time that I ever read in any Moon Knight iterations that they just come out and say it. Like, you never really knew that for sure. Like, in the previous versions of Moon Knight, you kind of knew it, but they never talked about it. He actually just says, I can't die.
By the time you get to this point in the comics, he's died multiple times, and Khonshu always brings him back.
Right, right.
And so as long as he's connected to Khonshu, I have read some other comics where that tenuous with that gets tenuous, and he gets worried that Khonshu, like, he's not following Khonshu and fulfilling Khonshu's will, so that Khonshu might not bring him back, which is an interesting aspect. I felt like in the modern take, the last one we read from 2014 from Warren Ellis is probably a better introduction to the creepier aspect than this one, because this one sort of dives in assuming you know a bit, but also is much more high level and exists to introduce a story that then there's a story element that blows my mind and will blow the mind of anybody who's been a longtime Moon Knight reader, which is this doctor whom he meets, who's like, there is only one, because Mark Spector's like, you know, hey, I'm the Fist of Khonshu, I'm this. He's like, well, I assure you, there are not many, there's only one who outranks me in the Church of Khonshu. And this villain becomes Hunter's Moon, which, if Moon Knight's the full moon, he's the new moon. And if he, like, the way he reveals it is like, there is a Fist of Khonshu, but I'm the left. If you're the right hand, I'm the left hand. It's like, whoa. Yeah.
I like the, that was a good teaser
like, it makes you want to read more and understand that, because he knows who he is. And he's like, ah, Moon Knight. And so that's an interesting story thread that they're like, you're going to want to pull on this one. But yeah, I guess I liked aspects of both of it, Joe. I mean, I think either one of them you could read and get, I suppose, up to speed on any one of the newer ones and get up to speed on it. But I'm with you. I liked the older one better in terms of the whole storyline. This one just had some interesting subplots. So it's like, ooh, that's kind of interesting. I'm still just amazed by how they, on this one, around how they just come out and say he can't die.
Yeah.
Like, do you really need to say that? I don't know. I just thought it was odd.
Yeah, it was interesting. But I liked all the books. I've really enjoyed rereading Moon Knight, especially some of the more modern takes that I hadn't read. This is where I do feel like people start to say he's like going back and rereading it. I didn't feel like reading the 1980s Moon Knight that he was in any way the Marvel version of Batman. He looked kind of like Batman. He had a cowl and a cape and had the weapons, but he's very much a globe-trotting adventure. And this, I feel like, is much more where he gets closer to a Batman, dark and gritty, except with it's like if Batman was a supernatural element where he wasn't there to protect Gotham from criminals, but he was there to protect anybody at night from any supernatural thing or person who might be trying to interfere with them or kill them in any way.
Right.
So we're
going to have a question for you. Was he in that comic? There was one panel that I was confused on. Is he arm wrestling Frankenstein?
I think he is.
Is that okay? All right. Sorry, you can take a break. I just was like, is that Frankenstein? I think it is.
It's okay. We're gonna take a quick break though. Jeff's going to tell you about some comic books coming up that I'm super excited about for casual readers. I'll definitely be checking them out. And then once he gives you the lowdown on those comics, we'll wrap up sort of our Moon Knight talk, have our final random thoughts, and then say goodbye.
You're listening to your friendly neighborhood casual comics cast. And now it's time for the tremendous trio of treasures. Three new comics that we recommend for all of our loyal listeners. First, Edgar Allan Poe's Snifter of Death, number 6, from Ahoy Comics. It's the last issue, or at least the last issue until the new series starts. The anthology comics theme this month is complaining and whining about how terribly public life is going. First, a demon drags Poe through the hellish nightmare landscape that we call the Internet. In silence, a fable. Then, the American people elect a new president, Death itself, in putting the D in DC. All this plus prose, pics, and possibly poems. Then, Astro City. That was then, one shot from Image Comics. Astro City returns with an all-new special. Who were the Jayhawks? How did they inspire five teen sidekicks looking for answers to hit the road in a rickety crime mobile in 1969? And how will this affect Astro City in the present? This one-shot special features new and existing heroes and launches a mystery that will drive the forthcoming Astro City series. Finally, G.I. Joe, Saturday Morning Adventures, number 2, from IDW Publishing. Cobra strikes. Paris, Tokyo, and Washington, D.C. are attacked, and G.I. Joe is there to fight them. But will the Joe team be enough to stop the extra-large androids from wreaking havoc in these three capital cities? And is there more to the fiendish Cobra Commander's plans than simple destruction? Find out in Three Heads of the Serpent, the second chapter in this extension of the classic animated adventures of G.I. Joe. Yo, Joe! And that's your Casual Comics Cast tremendous trio of treasures for this episode. Pick them up wherever fine comic books are sold today.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. I hope that you're as excited for those new comics that Jeff was telling you about as I am. I'll be recapping those at some point. Maybe take a peek at my blog, casualcomicsguy.com. You never know when I'll get motivated to drop some reviews on there. I can do that sporadically. But this week's all Moon Knight week for the Disney Plus Moon Knight series. And Mark and I just finished reading some old takes on Moon Knight, some new takes on Moon Knight, the Moon Knight. And Mark, any final random thoughts? Like, what was it? What was your favorite pieces of like this, like of the Moon Knight character? And what do you hope they bring through in the TV show?
I'm really excited to see how they do the I hate to say multiple personalities, but it's the easiest way to talk about how are they introduce all these characters of Moon Knight and then the depiction of Bushman. Like, what are they going to tell that story? How close is it going to be to the story? And then lastly, and you mentioned it earlier, Joe, this tie back to the supernatural. Are they going to have him arm wrestling Frankenstein in the series? Are they going to have him kill vampires? Are they going to acknowledge that these type of creatures exist? Because I don't think the MCU has talked about that at all.
They haven't yet. I find it tough to believe that this is where they would introduce that concept.
Right.
I think they'll get close. And having watched the trailers, so the things I know is I know the villain of this series isn't Bushman, right? I believe, like, mm-hmm. I've read online that, is it Ethan Hawke?
Is the I thought villain? Ethan Hawke, is he not Bushman?
I don't know. Is he or is he not? Who is he?
Oh, that's a good point.
Ethan Hawke, who are you?
Who
maybe he is. But while we're looking at that, let's see, Midnight Man. I don't know who Midnight Man is, so I will get to check that out.
I think he's going to be Dracula.
Dracula.
Dracula. Maybe not.
By the way, I have to do a shout out while we're talking about Blade in the Marvel Universe and vampires. Do you watch What We Do in the Shadows, Mark?
Yeah, I've seen parts of it. Yeah, I haven't watched all of it yet.
Have you watched the TV series on Hulu?
Yes.
You got to watch. There's an episode where they beat the Vampire Council. The Vampire Council shows up and Wesley Snipes is on it because he's the Daywalker.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And he's connected via his laptop, but he's got a bad Wi-Fi signal and he can't hear anything that's going on. Shout out, if you know what he's watching, if you're not watching What We Do in the Shadows on FX, you should be watching that. But I don't know much about Midnight Man, but maybe you're right, maybe he's a vampire. What it does appear in the previews, though, is they are leaning into the multiple personalities, because I think it looks like he's Stephen Grant, and then somebody calls and it's like Mark, and he's like, who is this Mark that you're talking about? I have seen the costume, the traditional costume and the Mr. Knight outfit, him wearing it. And I understand that they're bringing the Egyptian stuff into it pretty heavily and having some things in Egypt, because I read an interview with somebody who I believe is a director of more than one episode, if not all six, multiple episodes, who they hired somebody who is from Egypt to direct those because they wanted to, again, try to give Marvel credit if they get it right, is get some of the Egyptian culture right, because he was talking about how he gets tired of seeing Egyptian culture misrepresented on screen. And so he wanted to bring a little bit more authentic Egypt to the series than what you may have seen in other media.
Well, I think I'm looking forward to it, Joe. I think there's a lot of places they can go with this. And like they've proven with WandaVision and these TV shows, they can do these 6 or 8 episode events. And it doesn't necessarily need to tie to the larger universe. So that's also really curious. Like, I'm actually kind of looking forward to them not tying it into anything else.
Right.
But I think they're going to feel the need to do that. So they might, but who knows?
I think if there's a punch list of things that are like necessary, having read all these Moon Knight through the ages, that if it's going to be true to Moon Knight, you got to get Marlene in there. You got to get Frenchie in there. You got to get his background as a mercenary in Egypt. Mm-hmm. You got to get the Khonshu stuff. There's no doubt the Khonshu stuff has to be big. You got to get the multiple personality piece in there. You got to probably have him coming back from the dead. That's a big piece. Anything else that's like so essential to the character, you're like, they got to get this in there that I'm missing. You got to get.
I think they got to get the, well, you talked about all that, but I do think based on what we've read, they have to tie it to some type of like werewolves, Dracula, supernatural ties. If there are other creatures of the night that exist in the Marvel universe. And those are the real creatures of the night that attack, because if he's a protector of people at night, like I think they have to bring that in. So that's, I don't know if I'll be disappointed, but I just am really excited about how and if they're going to introduce it. And then I also heard that it's one of their more brutal kind of shows. Like,
right.
I guess to the point of it's not Disney-esque. So it'll be interesting to see is there going to be blood and gore?
Yeah.
How much is there going to be? Like, what's that going to look like?
Any Easter eggs you're hoping pop up?
It would be really funny if they tie in the really bad 80s costume from West Coast Adventures.
The gold belt.
The gold bracers and the gold belt.
Well, for all of our listeners, if they bring up a jiggle joint.
A jiggle joint. If they do that, I think that would be great.
I'll be like, you're referencing. That's a reference to Moon Knight number one from 1980.
Yeah. What I, you know, in reading some of the headlines the last couple of days in prep for this, some of them are like, Moon Knight fans might be disappointed. I'm like, how can you be disappointed? Like,
there's so much
different ways to depict him. You can't be disappointed. Like, he's literally a bunch of different people.
Right. I think that's what we proved by reading this, is there's almost no way, as long as you get those things right that we ticked off, as long as you get the coming back from the dead, Khonshu, Egyptian god, Marlene, Frenchie, his background as a mercenary. Right. And then, yeah, I think it's important to get, you know, protector of those who travel at night. If you get those things right, he's already been interpreted in almost any other way you can imagine. So it's like, you can't hardly get it wrong. It's just, so what do you choose to focus on?
Yes. But what if that's their point? What if he doesn't come back from the dead? What if that's not, what if it's a whole other take? I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not going to be mad. It better not suck. Like, it better be good, but I'm with you. I think they need to get some of those things right, but I'm not so sure that they have to, because there's so many different ways to tell this story.
I read a whole series from Jeff Lemire that was like from the mid 2000s, where they did a take where he didn't come back from the dead.
Well,
and it was, they were trying to convince him that all of that he imagined, and that there never was a Moon Knight.
Right.
I mean, there's another way you could do it.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying there. And that might be part of the mystery. And then, cause you led this off, Joe, you talked about what you liked about the writer taking a flip the script take on Hulk and Thor. So this may do that. They may like, we're going to flip it.
We're going to flip it. But I'm with you. I'm hoping that they use this character to tie into a different part of the Marvel universe that spins out of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and the introduction of Blade and the Black Knight coming to screen, where there gets to be this darker aspect of Marvel that's more supernatural, and Moon Knight plays a big part of that, because he always has in the Marvel universe.
That's right. And by the way, you said so Ethan Hawke plays this guy named, last name is Harrow, Dr. Arthur Harrow. And he had a really tiny, minor character bit part in the comics. So they have complete creative freedom who Ethan Hawke is, because he was some rando character in a 1985 Moon Knight Fists of Khonshu number two.
Okay.
So who knows what he's going to be?
Which I just read and I don't remember him. So it must have been a pretty minor part.
He was a scientist and a candidate for the Nobel Prize in Medicine, thanks to his research in, quote, pain theory. His research continued, but when he started abducting innocent people for his research, Moon Knight took notice.
That is the one I read, and I don't even remember that being him.
Yep.
He's like taking dudes and grafting stuff onto him or something.
So that, maybe they may really lean into that. I like that storyline. That's pretty cool. Doing experiments on people for pain theory.
All right. Well, it's on the Marvel Unlimited app. Go grab it. Moon Knight number two from 1985. Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu, which I have in a box behind me somewhere, because that's the series I actually have that I read a million times when I went to dig them out. It's like, which series of Moon Knight do I have? That's the one I have. The 5-issue limited series.
There you go. Dr. Arthur Harrow.
Paging Dr. Rosenpenis.
Dr. Pepper. You're wanted in the diabetic ward immediately.
All right, Mark. Well, thanks for goofing around with me and talking about Moon Knight. The moon is not full tonight, but I'm feeling the Moon Knight love, and we will be back soon to chat about our thoughts on Moon Knight, and maybe we'll have a little chat around Batman and see what parallels we're drawing between Moon Knight and Batman after the premiere of the show, as well as just getting ready. I think it's almost time to start getting ready for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. We're like less than 60 days away, aren't we?
I'm vengeance.
It's like a month and a couple of weeks.
It's in May, right? It's early May. So exciting.
And then we'll be back to just bitch about Morbius some more. All right, Mark. Well, thanks for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for sticking with us. And until next time on the Casual Comics Cast, cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, at Casual Comics Guide, at our blog, casualcomicsguide.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.